was neutrality to be left alone. Old certainties were falling everywhere. My mind raced. Lord Kurioka Ruben had every incentive to restore the balance of power, hadn't he? But he wouldn't allow his son to be kidnapped, right? Unless it was a cunning double bluff. Perhaps he'd always intended to arrange for Aiken to be ransomed back to himself, once I'd served my purpose. Or maybe he decided that Isabella was a better heir after all. And yet, it didn't seem quite right. Too many things didn't quite add up. I peered down at Feruza. "Why do you want the potion?" "None of your business," she said. "Come here, now." "You're just a minion, aren't you?" I knew taunting her was dangerous, but it might provoke her into doing something stupid. Alana had taunted one of the maids, less her family, until the maid had snapped and hexed her into silence. "Do you really believe that whoever gives the orders cares about you? You'll be killed the moment you outlive your usefulness." "Come here, you little brat," Feruza ordered. Her eyes were dark with rage. I didn't want her anywhere near me. She'd probably hex me into next week, even though it meant I wouldn't be any good for forging for a few days. "Now." She lifted her shield and started forward, holding it in front of her. I jabbed the spellcaster at her, but the magic slammed into the shield and flashed out of existence. The blast had barely knocked her back. Whoever had forged the shield had done a very good job. Feruza's minions stood, raising their own shields. I braced myself, then lifted the spellcaster and started jabbing it at the ceiling. They stumbled backwards, a second before the roof caved in with a deafening roar. I hoped none of them had been caught by the debris as I turned and ran to the window. There was a faint glimmer of dawn in the distance, but otherwise the world was still wrapped in darkness. Feruza had been right, I realized as I swung my leg over the windowsill. We were a very long way from civilization. Scrambling down the wall was an utter nightmare. I'd done stupid things before, but this was the worst. I had to struggle to find handholds, slipping and sliding as my fingers brushed against smooth parts of the wall. The wind blew gently, mocking me. I tasted faint hints of seawater as I breathed in and out. I lost track of time as I crawled down, finally landing on solid ground. But it couldn't have been that long. The world hadn't gotten much brighter. I leaned against the wall for a long moment, trying to catch my breath. There was very little magic in the air, according to my spectacles, save for faint flickers that were as enigmatic as always. My eyes slowly became accustomed to the gloom, picking out hints of trees and buildings in the semi-darkness. Where were we? A nasty thought lingered at the back of my mind. There was one place they might have taken us, one place we could have been hidden indefinitely. I heard a faint sound in the distance. They were coming. Pushing the thought aside, I spilled my last potion bottle on the ground under my feet, then turned and fled into the darkness. Chapter 28. I thought I heard an explosion behind me as I scurried through the shadows, but I didn't dare look back to see the flash. That would make them a little more careful about chasing me, I hoped. Feruza might be able to go through the supply cupboards and figure out how much I'd made, but I doubted it. I'd fudged the figures as best I could, overusing some ingredients and underusing others. Mum would have been furious if I'd done that in her potions lab, but Feruza would have worse problems. She couldn't be sure just how much I'd made of anything. I probably should have set the suite on fire when I left, I thought. In hindsight, it had been a mistake, although setting fire to some of the potion's ingredients would have had unpleasant consequences. That would definitely have made it impossible for her to tell what I'd made. The darkness closed in around me as I hurried through the enigmatic buildings. Flickers of magic shot past me, growing stronger and stronger. I really didn't think there were spells at all. I'd heard of bursts of raw magic. There had been a sudden magical surge 200 years ago, when a large stockpile of potions ingredients had been destroyed. But this was different. The nasty thought I'd had about where we were surfaced again. There weren't many places with such odd magical fields. I glanced from side to side, listening carefully for sounds of pursuit. The shadows seemed to move when I wasn't looking. I nearly blasted the shadow before realizing that it was just a shadow. But I couldn't hear anything behind me. And yet, I felt a growing unease that nagged my mind. What were Firouza and her comrades doing? Tracking spells might not work on me, but they might work on my friends. And if they had dogs... I'd read stories about dogs that had been thrown off the scent by pepper, or running water. But I didn't have any pepper, and I wasn't sure I would have trusted the water either, if I'd stumbled across a lake. My stomach growled, reminding me that I'd be hungry soon. I'd stowed some supplies in my bag. There were advantages to a steady diet of bread, ham, and cheese, but they wouldn't last long. I hadn't been able to prepare enough sandwiches for all three of us. I'll need to turn them back, sooner rather than later, I thought. The path sloped upwards, taking me up a hill. Keeping them inanimate for so long will have side effects. I shuddered as I stopped outside a darkened building and peered inside. It was deserted as far as I could tell. There didn't even seem to be any rats, let alone any other vermin. I didn't like rats much, but I really didn't like the implications. Come to think of it, I hadn't heard owls or any other night bird either. The whole region seemed to be utterly lifeless. I braced myself, then inched inside. The air smelled musty, as if the building had been abandoned a very long time ago. I was starting to think that was true. And yet, I turned my head from side to side, thinking hard. There was something there, wasn't there? It was calling to me, a gentle pull. I touched the bracelet, but it was cold. And yet the air seemed pregnant with possibility. I knew it might well be dangerous. I'd been warned to be very careful of subtle traps, although most of them didn't seem to have any effect on me. But it was hard to believe it. It spoke to me personally. And that's the danger, I told myself, as I sat down on the stone floor. The light was a little brighter now, bright enough to show me that the room was empty. Everything that wasn't stone had rotted away a long time ago. It wants me to come to it. I reached into my pocket and pulled both of the statuettes out, placing them on the floor. The dispeller should be able to free them from the gesh, but only if it had time to work. I rested the dispeller next to Aiken, then pulled the third spellcaster from my bag. I hadn't dared use it earlier. The spell it cast was too easily counted. But neither Aiken nor Rose would have time to fight. Pointing the spellcaster at them, I triggered the dispeller. They returned to normal, sitting upright with terrifying speed. I stunned them both before they could cast a spell. Sorry, I thought. I didn't dare speak out loud. The air was so still that I was sure that even a whisper would go quite some distance. You'll both have headaches when you wake up. I tied their hands and feet together, then put the dispeller to work. Hopefully the gesh would be gone by the time they woke up, but if it wasn't... I shook my head. Aiken could get out of the ropes like lightning if he didn't freeze me first. All I could really do was slow them down a little, unless I was willing to transfigure them again. And doing that might be dangerous. I had no idea how aware they'd been while they'd been trapped. And no way to test it either, I thought. I couldn't even cast it on myself. I shivered as I waited. The spells Alana and Bella had been taught were designed to cushion the victim's mind, making it easier for them to cope with being turned into a frog, or a statue, or merely being unable to move. My spell didn't have any of those safeguards. It had more in common with Great Aunt Stregaria's spells than I cared to admit. But I hadn't had a choice. Even engraving a basic spell into an object of power was immensely difficult, particularly when I hadn't had much time to prepare. The light grew brighter, steadily. I looked at the door, wondering if I should go check on our surroundings, or even find out what was in the nearby rooms. But I could still feel the pull at the back of my mind. Whatever it was still calling to me, and I didn't dare give it any satisfaction, or it would just get stronger. I stood and started to pace, trying hard to keep my churning thoughts under control. If I'd got something wrong, we were in deep trouble. My body ached. I checked my legs. Dozens of scrapes and scabs where I'd banged my skin during the climb. But there was nothing I could do about it, not now. Firouza hadn't given us any medical supplies, beyond the basics for a potions lab. I didn't think any of them would come in handy now. I just had to put up with the discomfort until we made it home. I took a long breath. The sensation, almost a smell, was stronger now, a faint tingle that sent shivers down my spine. And yet, it wasn't a smell at all. It was... I struggled to describe it, even to myself. I would have thought of it as a modified repulsion ward, if I'd been able to see the spell form. Dad used them to deter people from trying to climb our walls. It kept most apple scrumpers out of our orchards. There were nastier defenses further inside for thieves who didn't take the hint. No focused magic, I thought. Just... Aiken jerked, his eyes snapping open. I raised the spellcaster, ready to stun him again. I'd have bare seconds, if that, before he hexed me. I was tempted to strike first, despite the risk. If I was wrong, he was going to hex me and then take me back to the cell, and we wouldn't have a second chance to escape. "Cat," Aiken managed.
"I..."
He turned to one side and retched, hard. I allowed myself a moment of relief, then helped him into the recovery position. Retching was a good sign, I'd been told. It was proof that whatever ailed him was on its way out. And yet, I watched him warily. If he made a single false move, I'd stun him first and give him another go with the dispeller. He'd hate me for it, but it was better than being recaptured.
That was bad.
Aiken's voice was practically a croak. I relaxed, slightly.
I couldn't stop myself.
It's all right, I said. I pulled the bottle of water out of my bag and passed it to him. We'd have to ration it carefully. I had no idea if the water here, if we found a river, was safe to drink. How much do you remember? Rose groaned before Aiken could answer. I helped her to lie on her side, trying to split my attention between both of them. The gesh seemed to have vanished, but it would be a long time before I relaxed. I'd read too many stories where someone was secretly enchanted, appearing perfectly normal until the spell took effect. But if Aiken and Rose had been enspelled like that, the dispeller should have removed it too, right? I could only hope I was right. There are no certainties any longer, I thought, as I passed Rose the water. She drank carefully. I took it back before she could empty it. Everything we thought we knew is wrong. Aiken pulled his hands free and rubbed his forehead.
Where are we?
An abandoned settlement, I said. I eyed him, worried. Gesh or no Gesh, his senses would be sharper than mine. What do you sense?
Magic, Aiken said. It feels... weird.
Rose looked up at me. We shouldn't be here, she said, with the earnestness of a child half her age. She sounded as though she'd hit her head. This is a bad place. Don't try to cast spells, not yet, I said firmly. I freed Rose's hands and left her to release her legs. It would give her something to focus on. How much do you remember? You did something to us, Rose said. She concentrated. Everything after that is something of a blur. Probably for the best. I stood. Tiredness nagged at my mind, but I had to force myself to move. We were still far too close to our captors for comfort. Can you two stand?
Barely, Aiken said.
His eyes opened wide.
What happened to you? I looked down at myself and blinked. My shirt and trousers were torn and stained with blood. My blood. And I hadn't thought to pack a change of clothes. I giggled, despite the seriousness of the situation. My clothes were a ruin, my hair was a mess, my hands and face were dirty. High society would throw up its collective hands in horror if they saw me in such a state. Mum would order me thrown in a bath and viciously scrubbed by the maids. I had to climb down from our prison, I said wryly. I didn't know just how far down I'd climbed either. My scars bore mute testament to my feet. You two got the easy part. Aiken nodded, then stopped and looked around.
Rose is right, he said. We really shouldn't be here.
Yeah, I said. If I'd sensed that something was wrong, it had to be bad. I might not be able to sense magic, but I could sense its effects. We really need to start moving. I returned most of my tools from my pack, but kept the dispeller and the spellcasters in my pockets. I'd need them if we had to fight. I briefly considered giving some of my protective bracelets to Aiken and Rose, but they'd only make it impossible for them to use their magic too. I didn't think the trade-off was worth it. Instead, I walked to the nearest door and peered through into the next room. It was as bare and barren as the first. Rose caught my arm. What do you think this place was? I don't know, I said. The stone walls had survived, however long the building had been abandoned. But everything else had long since rotted away. Carpets, wooden furnishings, everything was gone. It could have been a house or a forge or... A house, Aiken said. He sounded disturbed. I wondered if he'd had the same thought as myself. Rose hadn't been raised on the old stories, but we had. And one built quite some time ago. I frowned as we glanced through the remaining rooms. It could be a country villa, I decided. There were bedrooms, storage rooms, a giant dining room and an indoor swimming pool that was deep enough to worry me. If I'd fallen into the waterless pool in the darkness, I'd have broken my legs. There wouldn't have been any hope of climbing out either. My eyes trailed over a set of headless statues. I couldn't tell if they'd decayed over the years or had been designed to look that way. And rested on a plinth. It was odd. It reminded me of the shrines we raised to our ancestors, but it was different. A whole set of faded designs were carved into the stone. They were so faded that I couldn't be sure I was seeing the whole thing. The air felt odd as we stepped out of the building. I couldn't put my finger on it. The wind blew, yet it felt dead. And yet, there was something timeless about the whole region, as if the world had slowed to a halt. No birds sang in the trees, no insects buzzed through the air, no small animals burrowed through the undergrowth. It was eerie, even to me. Both Rose and Aiken grew increasingly jumpy as we looked around. I didn't blame them. It must have been far worse for them. This place is wrong, Rose said. I nodded in agreement. The buildings had looked bad enough in the darkness, but they looked far worse in the day. They looked ancient, yet frozen in time. Decayed, yet intact enough to be made livable with very little effort. And yet, my head hurt every time I looked into the darkened doorways. It was very hard to escape the feeling that the darkness led in directions the human mind wasn't equipped to understand. Rose was definitely right. There was something fundamentally wrong about the whole place. The buildings looked old. I'd seen buildings like them in Watershallet, buildings that dated all the way back to the Thousand-Year Empire, but these were different. My head started to pound as I tried to come to grips with what I was seeing. Stone walls, covered with stone heads, human heads, monstrous heads. Gargoyles stood on every wall, peering down at us. The buildings were ancient and decayed, yet preserved. Preserved like flies trapped in amber. All of a sudden, I understood precisely why Firouza had been so confident she could keep us hidden here. There was so much wild magic in the area, that even blood-linked magics would be unreliable. I glanced at Aiken.
We have to go up, Aiken said. We need a view.
Rose didn't look happy, but she followed us upwards anyway. The wind blew hot and cold, hot enough to make me sweat, cold enough to make me shiver. I gritted my teeth and forced myself onwards, trying to remember the stories about my very distant ancestors. I'd been told they'd lived in sunlit lands, where they'd walked out in the noonday sun, while visitors cowered under the shade and rain was a myth. But then, very few of those stories had survived the Empire. I had no way to know which of them, if any, were actually true. My sense of unease grew stronger and stronger as we reached the top of the hill. The trees were pretty in a way, yet they were twisted, as if they'd been warped by powerful magic. I wasn't even sure they were alive. I certainly didn't dare touch them. How could they even survive without insects? The whole region was as silent as the grave. Perhaps the trees, too, were simply frozen in time.
There are no weeds, Aiken said.
We peered into a garden. It was as neat and regimented as my mother's garden. Yet there was something eerie about it. Nothing moved, not even when the wind blew.
This place is creepy.
I nodded, peering down into the distance. The entire region was nothing but a ruined city. I could see wreckage stretching in all directions, piled high as far as the eye could see, and somehow frozen in time. And yet, I saw a harbor below me. It had clearly been a harbor. I'd seen it before, on yellowed and dusty maps the ancients had preserved for us. A giant inland lake, connected to the sea through a canal. Four hills, looming over the city they guarded. And us, standing on the fifth hill, some distance from the rest.
Parnassus Hill, Aiken whispered quietly.
His words echoed in the stillness.
We're on Parnassus Hill. We're a very long way from home.
I sucked in my breath. We were on Parnassus Hill. The thought I hadn't wanted to admit, snapped back into my mind. There were very few places as tainted with wild magic as the city below us. We were on Parnassus Hill. And that meant that the ruined city below us was none other than the Eternal City itself. Chapter 29. I'd heard the stories, but none of them came close to the reality. The Eternal City had been the City of Light once upon a time. Flying machines, flying buildings, castles in the sky. The entire city had been paved in gold and silver. The buildings lit up so brightly that the city could be seen for thousands of miles. There hadn't been any lighthouses in the harbor, if the stories were to be believed. The glow had been bright enough to let sailors work day and night. Now it was rubble. Yet, I stared, trying to pass out what I was seeing. The rubble looked odd, great shifting patterns that made little sense. It struck me as I inspected what might once have been the Imperial Palace, that the buildings had been floating, if they hadn't been simply held up by magic. Dad had told me that was possible to build a house using magic instead of a more mundane framework, but it was dangerous. A single cancellation spell might bring the entire building crashing down. Looking at the remains of the city, I couldn't help feeling that something had happened to the magic. The entire city had crashed down to rubble. Worse than that, I thought numbly, the floating buildings would have crushed anything underneath when they hit the ground. Rose shivered. Can't you feel it? Aiken nodded in agreement. I glanced from one to the other, feeling blind. A faint haze hung over the city, but otherwise, nothing. And yet the sense of unease grew stronger the more I stared at the rubble. It called to me, it repelled me. Whatever had been unleashed here, in the heart of the Thousand-Year Empire, had been thoroughly unnatural. I'd never felt anything like it, ever. None of Dad's protective wards came close to matching it.
Whatever happened here was bad, Aiken said.
Rose caught my arm. What did happen here? I kicked myself mentally. Rose wouldn't know, of course. She hadn't been raised with the old tales. Her family knew very little about the kingdom's past, or about the world outside their village. The king certainly wouldn't want to encourage commoners to think about the time before the kingdom took shape and form. Who knew what they'd think when they heard the empire hadn't been so invulnerable after all? This was once a village, I said. It was hard to believe, but all the stories agreed on it. The original name was lost long ago. Magic, someone living in the village, was the first to codify the principles of magic, to bind it to his will. He taught others, who taught others still. Soon he had an army. They set out to conquer the world.
They succeeded, Aiken said bluntly.
I nodded. The Thousand-Year Empire hadn't known about Hang Chao. Maybe they hadn't realized the world was round, but they had swept over most of the known world. If the stories were true, the first set of conquests had been effortless. And why not? The ancients hadn't known what magic could do until it was too late. Resistance had been crushed before the village's enemies could copy their techniques for themselves. Somewhere along the line, they discovered how to make objects of power, I added. That secret had been kept, even as more common magical techniques leaked out. But then there were very few spells that could only be cast by a handful of people. And then they were unstoppable. Their armies marched from one end of the continent to the other, north and south, east and west. They united the entire known world under their rule. I tried to think how my distant ancestors must have felt when they'd seen the flying machines and marching armor. They'd had magic, of course, but they'd never codified it into something usable. So many records from that time had been lost, yet I was sure I knew how the story had gone. Resistance had been crushed. A new ruling elite had been installed. Slowly, surely, my distant ancestors had been integrated into the empire. They absorbed talent, I remembered. It was one of the stories Dad had made sure to tell us, when we'd been younger. Smart and capable magicians were invited to the internal city to study, to learn magic and improve on it. Others were offered a chance to join the ruling class. And all the benefits slowly filtered down to the rest of the population. Food and drink, health and education, even public toilets. It was a golden age. Rose looked pensive. It struck me suddenly that she'd been snatched up because of her talent, but she wouldn't be going back to her village to improve it. I felt a pang as I realized that Rose, when she graduated, would have very little in common with her family. The poorest citizen of Shalott would still have a better life than a commoner out in the countryside. I wanted to hug her, to tell her that it would be better, but I couldn't. I didn't think it would be better.
And then it fell, Aiken said. We don't know what happened, Rose. No one knows.
I looked into the haze, remembering the stories. The city had fallen, they'd insisted, but there had been very few details. The wars that followed the collapse had seen to that, tearing apart all the institutions the Empire had so painstakingly built. By the time the dust settled, and 100 kingdoms had taken the Empire's place, the Eternal City lay in ruins. Very few people dared venture into the once great city. It was believed to be cursed. And we were brought here, I thought. Feruza had nerve. I'd give her and her backers that much. But then they'd had fewer options than I'd realized. Being here would confuse the blood magic our families would use to trace us, without using wards that would have no other purpose. But what did they want us for? My eyes traced the rubble, remembering the old stories. Was that the Imperial Palace? Or was it the Commandery, where the conquest of the known world had been planned? Was that massive building the hospital where the Empire's medical magics had been developed? Or was it a temple? A strange, angular shape could be seen near the water. Was it the remains of a giant ocean-going ship? I'd heard stories of wreckage sailors had seen, half hidden under waves. The ancients had built ships that made our largest clippers and galleons look tiny. And was that framework part of a flying machine? There was something despondent about the whole scene. I felt sad, almost mournful. I felt as if I was on the verge of tearing up. I was looking down on 1,000 years of history, smashed to rubble in a moment. The Eternal City looked to have been easily 5 or 6 times the size of Shalott, perhaps more. Yet it now lay in utter ruins. And Shalott was one of the largest cities in the kingdom. Would my city die the same way one day? I caught my breath. "We can't stay here all day."
"No," Bacon said.
He was staring at the city, his eyes wide.
"But where do we go?"
"And where do we find food?" Rose didn't seem to have any trouble dragging her eyes away from the city. "We don't have anything like enough to keep us going for more than a few days. And we really need water."
I nodded, even though I didn't have an answer.
We could slip down to the sea, I thought, and scoop up some water. But even with purification spells, I wasn't sure we could drink it. There were stories about the waters around the Eternal City, tales of monsters and strange apparitions, and things below the waves. Sailors would sooner round the Horn and risk death than sail near the Eternal City. I'd never believed the stories, but now, I believed them. I didn't know if we could risk eating or drinking anything from the Eternal City.
"We'll head north," Aiken said.
He jabbed a finger away from the city.
"That should get us on the way home."
I felt myself torn between the urge to laugh and cry. We were over 1,000 miles from Shalott. We'd reach the border sooner. I started to giggle, helplessly. If we started walking now, we might just reach the border in a couple of weeks, assuming we didn't get caught on our way home, or lost. I'd seen a handful of maps, but none of them had been particularly detailed. Very few people visited the Eternal City. Even fewer returned. Aiken glanced up sharply. A second later, a hex flashed over our heads.
"They're here,"
he snapped. I followed his gaze. 2 men were standing at the bottom of the hill, pointing their fingers at us. A hex snapped towards Rose. I caught it on my hand, feeling my bracelet growing warm as it absorbed the spell. Aiken cast 2 spells back, but the men had no trouble blocking them. I wasn't surprised. Whoever they were, it was clear they were fully trained magicians.
"This way,"
Aiken snapped. He caught Rose's arm and yanked her to the side.
"Hurry!"
I drew the spellcaster and jabbed it towards the men several times. Flashes and bangs filled the air, resounding oddly in the haze. I didn't think I'd hit them, but it should force them to duck. I hoped it would force them to duck. They might have upgraded their protection spells after my escape, after they'd seen what I could do. But there was no way to know.
"Come on!" Aiken called.
I followed him, clutching the spellcaster with 1 hand. The air grew hotter and thicker as we descended the hill and ran through a maze of old buildings, each one creepier than the last. I heard shouts behind me, but there was no sign of pursuit. I wondered idly just how many men it would take to search the area properly. Alana and Bella had played hide-and-seek with their friends, but I'd never been able to take part. My lack of magic would have kept me from hiding, let alone ambushing anyone who came too close. At least their hunting spells won't work so well here, I thought, as the haze grew thicker. The thought made me smile. They'll have to set eyes on us. I glanced back as we paused behind a stone house. The aura from inside was so dark that even I could feel it, something so eerie that I wanted to turn tail and run. No one was behind us, yet I felt as though we were being watched by unseen eyes. I looked up. A stone gargoyle was looking down at us, its teeth bared in a grimace of pure hate. Others were looking at us too. I told myself, sharply, that any enchantments animating the gargoyles would have decayed long ago, but I wasn't sure that was true. There were plenty of stories of cursed tombs that had killed anyone foolish enough to defy the warnings and step inside. The shouts grew louder. I looked around, trying to place them, but I couldn't. They seemed to be coming from all around us, echoing off the buildings and blurring together into a terrifying whole. Sweat poured down my back as Aiken started to lead us around the house and into another frozen garden. I couldn't go back to that cell. I wouldn't. I drew one of the other spellcasters from my pocket and held it in front of me, looking around for targets. I knew the theory of magical hide-and-seek. We reached the garden and ducked low, shuffling towards a frozen hedgerow and the concealed ditch, the ha-ha, in front of it. My eyes started to hurt as we inched forward, the spectacles showing me flash after flash of raw magic, and something indistinct, something I couldn't quite understand. Whatever forces had been unleashed in the Eternal City, and no two stories agreed, they'd warped the landscape forever. The entire region was a death trap. I just hoped it was confusing Firouza and our enemies as much as ourselves. Aiken paused as we reached the hedgerow and crawled along the ha-ha. I wondered if we should inch down to the ditch. It looked safe, but some instinct told me it would be a very bad idea. Whoever had designed the garden had clearly not shared my mother's belief in regimenting everything. Rows of herbs contrasted oddly with sections that had been allowed to run wild and free, perhaps in an attempt to see which plants would survive and thrive in such a competitive environment. Mum had never liked the concept. She'd always believed it would induce random mutations in potion ingredients.
"We need to keep moving north," Aiken whispered. "I don't want to go any closer to the city itself."
I nodded, although I wasn't comfortable with the decision. The ruins might give us shelter. I shook my head, remembering the tales. People would go into the Eternal City and come out changed, if they came out at all. There was a reason the entire region had been abandoned after all. Maybe I'd be safe. I didn't know. My friends wouldn't be safe.
"Keep inching north,"
I whispered back, as we reached the edge of the ha-ha. Its designer had clearly believed in catching unwary trespassers in the ditch. Anyone who managed to scramble over the hedge would fall into the ha-ha and get stuck.
"Once we're out of the city, we can decide what to do next."
I glanced back at Rose. She was pale, but bringing up the rear with a determination that surprised me. I told myself I was being silly. Rose had been brave to go to Jude's, leaving everything she knew behind. She was one of the bravest people I knew.
"Keep moving," she muttered.
Dry mud crunched as we pushed our way through the hedge, deafeningly loud in the eerie silence. I hoped the hunters hadn't heard.
"Don't stop for anything."
The road on the far side of the edge looked odd. Aiken glanced at it, then led the way down the pavement. I didn't blame him. There was no visible threat, yet the aura of danger was growing louder. I looked down the road towards the city and saw something. The road seemed to bend in a way my mind refused to grasp. The buildings behind us shifted and changed, as if they were illusions, or worse. I forced myself to look away as my head started to pound. We had to get out of the city before it was too late. Even here, on the outskirts, we were at risk. Aiken picked up speed as the shouts grew louder. They seemed to be coming from further away, but it was impossible to be sure. Firouza wouldn't let us go, not when there was a very real chance we'd make it out of the city. I smiled as the implications dawned on me. My family and Aiken's wouldn't stop trying blood magics until they found us. The moment we were out of the city, they'd be able to locate us. And then...
"Keep moving," I told myself.
"If we're so far from home, it will be days before someone comes to rescue us." I looked around as we reached a crossroads. A large villa sat at the far end of one of the roads, calling to me. I could feel the call, stronger now. And yet, neither Aiken nor Rose seemed to perceive anything. I frowned, puzzled. They should be more vulnerable, not less. I didn't know what I was feeling. It was just there. There was a flash of light. Aiken froze. I jumped. A young woman stood there, holding a focusing device in one hand and a small club in the other. She wore the same brown robes as the boy I'd frightened. Had it really been only a few short hours ago? I jabbed the spellcaster at her, but her protections deflected the spell. Ice trickled down my spine as I realized we were in trouble. The bracelet grew warm a second later. The woman was casting a spell. No, I thought. I am not going back. I yanked the dispeller from my pocket and threw myself forward. The woman's eyes went wide and she cast a spell, a moment before I shoved the dispeller into her. Her protections vanished in a flash of light. She slapped me hard, knocking me to the ground. I tasted blood in my mouth as she lifted her hand, then collapsed. Rose had stunned her an instant before she could hex us. Well done, I said, as I pushed the dispeller against Aiken. Rose wouldn't have stood a chance against an older magician, not normally. But the dispeller had destroyed all the woman's protections. She nearly had us. My cheeks throbbed, but I had no time to tend to it. Instead, we studied the woman's unconscious body while Aiken searched her. She was in her early 20s, I estimated, although I couldn't tell much else about her. Her face was a rich chocolate color, shades lighter than my own. Her clothes were cheap, probably completely untraceable. She would have been attractive if she hadn't been trying to recapture us. Nothing much, Aiken said. He held out his haul, a couple of devices of power and a simple gold chain she'd worn as a bracelet. I took the chain and inspected it, then waved the dispeller over the metal. What do you think it means? I shrugged. The chain hadn't been magical as far as I could tell, but it would be costly. And yet, everything else about her was cheap. I don't know, I said. I looked up and saw more people running towards us. But we have to move. Chapter 30 They're everywhere, Aiken said. Where do we go? I glanced at the villa. The call was getting stronger, yet I felt no threat. And besides, Aiken was right. The hunters were closing in rapidly. We might be able to hide in the villa, or find a place we could defend, or... I caught Rose's hand, trusting that Aiken would follow us. This way, I said. Come on! The shouts grew louder, intermingled with whistles, as we raced down the road towards the villa. It was massive, yet there was something about it that nagged at my mind. Two stories, as far as I could tell, surprisingly intact despite its location. And there were no gargoyles, nothing to suggest defenses. I told myself sharply that I could be running straight into a trap. There's no choice, I thought. We don't dare let them take us prisoner again. The gate was open, inviting us into a tiny courtyard. It looked odd to my eyes. There wasn't room for a carriage to turn unless the driver was prepared to scrape the walls. And there were no plants within view. Perhaps it was meant to be empty, I thought. Or perhaps we were about to sneak in through the servants' entrance. The other side of the villa might be far grander, or... I pushed the thought out of my mind as we reached the wooden door, temptingly ajar. I was surprised it had lasted so long, despite the location. The wood should have decayed long ago. I paused, forcing myself to think. The call was coming from inside the villa, and that meant we could be walking into very real danger. There was still no sense of threat, but there wouldn't be. A trap wouldn't look like a trap, would it? I'd heard of plants and animals that had a hypnotic effect on their prey. There were spells that did the same thing, drawing their victims in and holding them until it was too late. None of them looked like deadly traps. The sounds from behind decided me. I pushed the door open, then led Aiken and Rose into the villa. The inside was cool, so cool that I found myself shivering. There were no windows, yet yet it wasn't dark. Light seemed to fan through the room, coming from... I couldn't see where it came from. Dad's warnings rang in my mind as I closed and bolted the door, cutting off the outside world. I didn't think it would slow the hunters down for long. They wouldn't want to go into the buildings, but they didn't have a choice. They'd have to find us before we made it out of the city. "The magic here feels wrong," Aiken said. He tried to cast a spell, but the spell form refused to take shape. "Cat, where have you brought us?" "I don't know," I said truthfully. The villa didn't feel bad, not to me. But Rose looked uneasy, clutching my hand as though it was a lifesaver. Bacon didn't look much better. "I think..." The door shook. I said a rude word, then led the way into the next room. The villa was large enough for us to sneak to the far side, surely, unless the hunters had already surrounded the building. I forced myself to keep going anyway. We couldn't keep second-guessing ourselves until we froze, unable to decide what to do. The noise seemed to quiet down as we entered a passageway, and vanished altogether as we entered a third room. Somehow I didn't feel that was a good thing.
"Someone lives here," Aiken said. "And we shouldn't be here."
I frowned. The room was a dining room, utterly frozen in time. There were plates on the table, plates covered with food. It looked as though whoever lived in the villa had just stepped out for a moment, as though they would be back at any moment. My eyes swept the room, noting the wooden cupboards, the large portrait on the wall, and the tiny stuffed donkey sitting on one of the seats. I felt a pang of grief for the child who had owned the toy, centuries ago. She, or he, would be nearly 1,000 years dead by now. Rose made an odd sound. "Why is the portrait so weird?" I followed her gaze. There were 12 people in the portrait, 5 of them women. The men were facing outwards, their faces clearly drawn. The women had their backs to the painter, their figures barely recognizable as feminine. One of the girls was clearly younger than me, yet she had her back turned. I couldn't help wondering what it meant. Dad had never insisted that I turn my back when I sat for a family portrait.
"I've seen it before," Aiken said. "My family has a collection of ancient paintings from the Empire. They never depicted female faces, not once."
Rose and I exchanged glances.
"Why not?"
Aiken shrugged.
"Isabella asked," he said. "My father didn't know."
I considered it for a long moment. The Empire had given us so much of our culture, everything from clothes to etiquette, that I found it hard to understand why our portraits were different. Perhaps it was something that hadn't survived the collapse, a holdover from the days before the Empire had conquered most of the known world. My ancestors had lost most of their culture when they'd been brought into the Empire, but the Founders might have kept something of theirs. There had been a belief, if I recalled correctly, that knowing someone's face was enough to cast a spell on them. "But that makes no sense," I told myself. "They wouldn't be making portraits of anyone if that was true." I reached for the stuffed donkey, only to have it crumble to dust the moment it touched my hands. My fingers tingled. I brushed away the dust, feeling another pang of bitter guilt. The toy had been perfect, frozen in time until I tried to pick it up. Cold logic told me that the original owner was dead, but it was hard to believe it. I didn't really want to believe it.
"Don't touch the food," Aiken said.
Rose smiled. I hesitated, then nodded grimly. Who knew what would happen if I touched the food? I didn't want to find out the hard way. Instead, I looked around the room again, trying to see if there was anything else we should look at before we hurried onwards. There were books on the shelves, locked in a glass-fronted cabinet. I wanted to take them, but I didn't dare try. They might crumble the moment I touched them too. A crash echoed through the building. I exchanged glances with Akin and Rose, then led them out of the eerie room. The hunters seemed to be moving slowly, but that wouldn't stop them catching us. I wondered if we could defend the room, yet it didn't seem likely. We'd beaten one by sheer luck, but there were too many ways in and out of the dining room for us to hold it for long, and they'd know about the dispeller by now. Another crash, directly ahead of us. I cursed. They'd delayed long enough to surround the villa, then break in from both sides at the same time. It was likely to work, too. If they kept pushing from the front and the back, they were going to catch us between them. I looked from side to side, then led the way up a set of stone stairs. It might buy us more time. And I went down the wall once, I thought, as we crept up the stairs. We can do it again. The call seemed louder somehow as we reached the top of the stairs and glanced around carefully. Everything still seemed suspended in time. The carpet under our feet was intact, even though it should have rotted away hundreds of years ago. I led the way down the corridor, peering into the four bedrooms. Two of them were definitely for children, judging by the size of the beds. I wasn't the tallest girl in my year, but the beds were still too small for me. If I could have slept on the beds without breaking whatever magic was holding them suspended in time. The other two were either for older children or adults. And that one's for a woman, I thought. A half-opened wardrobe was clearly visible, crammed with dresses and scarves. I couldn't help thinking that much of what we knew about the Empire was clearly wrong. Why had the women covered their hair, perhaps even their faces? What else have we forgotten over the years? I heard voices from down below. The hunters had found the stairs. They might not know for sure we'd gone up, but they put a guard on them anyway. And when they figured out we weren't on the ground floor, they'd go up themselves. I wondered sourly if we could ward the stairwell, but I knew it would be pointless. Akin presumably could cast a dozen different wards. Dad had drilled them into Alana and Bella from a very early age. Yet I doubted he could cast anything that could stand up to an adult magician. And none of the objects of power I'd forged could help. We slipped down the corridor as the voices grew louder. One room was clearly a playroom, crammed with toys. Another was probably a small office, the walls lined with bookshelves. I promised myself that we'd come back, if we made it home. The books needed to be recovered before... Before what? The glee of discovering something new was tempered by the awareness that thousands of books had survived, in libraries or collections all over the known world. Their owners had passed them out, trying to figure out the secret. But none of them had deduced the truth. Crap, Akin muttered. They're coming up the stairs. I barely heard him. The call was suddenly very loud, leading me, leading us, into another office. It was larger than Dad's office, yet there was something regal about it. The walls were lined with gold and covered with portraits, a couple of which I recognized from the ancient tomes. Emperors, dead and gone years before their empire had crumbled into dust. And yet, the room was oddly bare. No bookshelves, no fireplace, no windows. Just a couple of chairs, a solid wooden desk, and a door on the far side of the room. Rose gasped. We're trapped! I glanced at her. What? There's no way out, Akin said. I could hear people coming down the corridor toward us, searching every square inch of the building. Cat, we're trapped! There's a door there. I pointed to the door. A faint light shone through the opening. We can go out that way. Akin stared at me. There's no door there. I looked back, stunned. I'd never been able to see through illusions. I'd never even been able to sense them, not until I'd forged my spectacles. Alana had made me walk into walls or close doors a couple of times, just by casting illusion she knew wouldn't fool anyone else. But now, why was I the only one who could see the door? Was it because I was the only one who could hear the call? "There's a door there," I insisted. I walked around the desk, wishing I had the time to go through it. The office looked as if it belonged to someone important, but maybe it was just for show, a place to hold meetings with visitors. Dad didn't do his important work in any of the offices he showed to outsiders. "Come on!" I reached out and waved my hand through the door, half expecting a spell to bite me. Alana had done that too, hiding a hex under an illusion. But there was nothing. My fingers met empty air. Aiken stared at me, perplexed. It dawned on me slowly that he really couldn't see the door. Rose seemed more inclined to take my word for it. But what was on the far side? I saw a corridor, I thought, but there was something odd about it. I didn't really know what I was seeing. "Come on," I repeated. The sounds from outside were getting louder. "We have to move." Rose hurried over to join me. Aiken cast a quick spell on the doorway, then walked over as I led the way down the corridor. I noticed he had his eyes shut as he walked through the hidden doorway. To him, and Rose, it must have seemed as though I had slipped right into a wall. And yet, his eyes jerked open as we passed through, clearly shocked. "Some magic!" The floor vanished. We fell, crying out in shock. I had a brief impression of utter darkness washing towards us, then I squeezed my eyes closed. A trap? I'd led my friends right into a trap. Perhaps it had been configured to snare me, or someone like me, rather than a magician. The Thousand-Year Empire had known about us. They'd probably had ways of dealing with us. I felt solid ground below my feet. We'd landed so gently I hadn't felt the impact. I opened my eyes carefully and looked around. We were in an underground chamber, illuminated by a single glowing orb. My friends were standing beside me, utterly unmoving. I poked Aiken in the arm, but felt... I wasn't sure what I felt. My fingers skittered over his shirt, as if there was something isolating him from me. I turned to Rose, but she was just the same. They were trapped like flies in amber. Panic crashed against my mind. I clutched the spellcaster tightly, even though there was no visible threat. The dim light made the shadows look nasty. I couldn't even see the chamber's walls, and the only thing I could see was a scroll sitting on a small wooden desk. It was surrounded by a faint haze of yellow light. The call snapped off the moment I saw the scroll, as if it had never been. It had wanted me to see the scroll, I realized dully. I pulled the dispeller out of my pocket and pressed it against Aiken, but nothing happened. The panic grew stronger, threatening to overwhelm me. If my friends were trapped again, what could I do? What had happened to us? Where were we? I looked up. The gloom was all-consuming, but I couldn't see any way up. I didn't even know how we'd gone down. I'd heard stories about teleport gates and other fantastic magics, but none of them seemed plausible. The power it would take to teleport a grown man from one side of Shallot to the other would be beyond 100 magicians working in unison. And yet, I knew we'd fallen. Maybe I was just overthinking it. It wouldn't take more than a handful of spells to slow our fall, then lock my friends in place. Maybe I was frozen too, I thought. It felt like paranoia, yet there was no way I could disprove it. There were spells that froze a person's thoughts as well as their bodies, trapping them until they were freed. I could have been frozen like that too, but... The thought nagged at my mind. The spells simply couldn't hold me for long. I touched Rose's cheek. It didn't feel like flesh. My fingers touched, but didn't touch, as if there was a barrier between us. It wasn't something I recognized. Time itself seemed to run oddly within the chamber. No, within the entire...